Hey y'all, it's Cody. I'm sitting here having a glass of wine tonight and about to read you this week's contrarian thinking. This one's called Relationships That ROI How to 10X Your Crew. This one's a little bit of a weird article for me to write, to be honest. It's like a look how cool all my friends are, so I must be cool too post. Not ideal. However, I had a call the other day in our cash flow group and someone posed this question. You seem to have built a pretty incredible network that might be better leverage even than money. How'd you do it? Whether it was flattery, worked, or not, aside, it made me ponder, how do you get invited to the theoretical cool kids table as an adult? The table where big companies are built, incredible authors write, creators play, lawmakers reside, and power players arm wrestle. It's a question worth asking and an answer worth seeking. My first answer will always be, do whatever you can to get in the room. Go to the conferences. Join the groups who are working towards what you're seeking. Community Inside Cashflow would be a great place to start. But besides that, today we're going to talk about, in 10 minutes or less, a framework that I call the friend flywheel. We're going to talk about history of the friend group creation and my process for creating humans. Let's talk first about the friend flywheel, the power of relationship mafias. I was talking to one of my friends, Sam Parr. He sold his business, The Hustle, to HubSpot for a pretty penny, about his success. I pontificated that he and Sean Puri, Noah Kagan, Andrew Wilkinson, et cetera, had a sort of next-gen tech guy mafia. It was brilliant, actually. A group of individuals all promoting each other's new ventures, investing in them, sharing ideas, and creating together. As one adds zeros to his bank account, so too did the other ones. As one added followers to his Twitter, so too did the others. A friend flywheel. They were pipe men for one another. Also, by the way, you're welcome. There's pretty incredible graphics in here drawn by yours truly. No big deal. So these hype men, they create a wheel that turns faster and faster for each of them as another friend had success velocity. As they reached that, not the individual alone hit it, but the group did. And there's a magic that happens when a friend of yours gets published, let's say. They then introduce you to the publisher. Then you get a book deal. Then you get on Good Morning America, so you introduce the publisher to your other friend. Then you get on a big podcast and tell them they should have your friend on it. Then you get a big investor and you mention your friend also is looking for funding. The 19th hole is not a country club or in the halls of university anymore. It is in the five humans you surround yourself with. And also maybe I should work on my art skills because there's another visual for you. Now, if you look through the lens of time, a small focus group of humans can change history, and in fact, they often do. Let's look at some examples. The PayPal Mafia, arguably one of the most powerful friend groups in modern history. These individuals now control some of the largest companies in the world after all meeting at the crossroads of PayPal. You can see a visual here. It's pretty wild. Founders of YouTube, Tesla, Square, LinkedIn, Slide, Yelp, Kiva, Palantir, and on and on. Then you've got the Lost Generation, Gertrude Stein's 1920s salons. This eccentric writer, Gertrude Stein, held sway in her salon with names like Henry Matisse, Ernest Hemingway, Sinclair Lewis, Ezra Pound, Pablo Picasso, and F. Scott Fitzgerald. They were dubbed the Lost Generation by Stein, and together created some of the most prolific works of their generation. Were they there because they were great, or did they become great by being there? I don't know. You can see a visual of them in The Lost Generation in Paris. Now, then you have the Federalist Society. This was a group formed in 1982 under Ronald Reagan to usher in the next generation of conservative ideas in the legal realm. The society slowly expanded to include Supreme Court justices, to senators, to university presidents. Check out this list. It's pretty ridiculous. Then you look at the OG podcasters. Now, this is one I made up, but I think you could include Tim Ferriss, Lewis Howes, Tom Bilyeu, James Altucher, maybe Jay Shetty into this mix too. Just Google any combination of those names and you'll see innumerable connections and cross promotions. Growing alone is infinitely harder than growing together. Ripples matter. So I went to try to create an infographic of all the laws the Federalist Society members had passed. I got to 300 and gave up. I went to grab all the works of art created by the Lost Generation. I gave up after trying to just even include Hemingway's and F. Scott Fitzgerald's. I went to try to find all the interactions between the OG podcasters, but stopped after 10 YouTube videos just between Ferriss and Bilyeu. Ripples matter. That confirmed for me that this one skill is perhaps more important than any of the things I share about investing and accumulating wealth, finding your people and accumulating them. Because the truth is, there's no such thing as a guru. I am still wrong constantly and have no idea what I'm doing just as often, but I know how to find someone who does and how to have that person help me. I call it collecting humans. Collecting humans might be a superpower. Here's my process as it stands for making your network not only incredibly fun, but ROI. There's sort of commandments I see in this. Number one is shut up and ask more questions. If you haven't read How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, put this blog down and go learn at the feet of the master. If you have, maybe a reread. Do you know why mirrors were put into elevators? My friend Alex Wormozzi told me they were inserted because riders were annoyed about the length of the ride. But insert a mirror and what happens? We stare at ourselves, fix our hair, put on lipstick, and forget about the ride. That is how you should think about conversations. Everyone else is just waiting for the doors to open, aka your mouth to shut, and the chance to talk. Get off the elevator. Let them tell you more and they'll find you more intriguing. It's the mirror. Number two, before you find interesting people, be interesting. That said, boring is a curse. Alex and I were talking about how do we decide when to take a meeting, to take a phone call, or even respond to a text. His response, I give zero fucks, I just don't respond. He said if someone pressed him, he'll say, I think you take more than you give. I certainly don't want to be a taker, but even more than that, I said, if you bore me, I'm out. Look at the humans in the friend flywheels above. They were builders, creators, thinkers. You are too. You just need to lean into it, then share it with the world. Number three, prep is greater than personal. Flattery will literally get you everywhere. But rather than vapid flattery, why not genuinely curious? I love to research humans before I meet them. When I first met Sean Puri and harassed him to get on one of my live calls, he said, wow, you've done your homework on me. When I first engaged with John, my former CIA friend, I knew he had in fact done his homework on me. It impressed me. Give the gift of your curiosity to a human, they'll feel it. Number four, bring a bag of tricks. You meet at a party. What do you ask? Hi, I'm Cody. I write and I invest for a living. What do you do? Where are you from? How do you know so-and-so? Horrifically underwhelming, wouldn't you say? It sounds odd, but I like to write down interesting questions that spur conversations in my Evernote. And when I'm grabbing a drink, I'll review them. I'm incredibly prone to boredom with small talk, and that selfish trait led me to wonder, how could every interaction be intriguing? Here are some of my favorites. What are you reading lately that has blown your mind or changed a perspective? What's the most interesting project you're working on right now? Why? I'm interested in X lately. What do you know about that? I'm interested in X lately. Here's an idea I have. What do you think about that? Number five, do less, but when you do it better. This probably applies for relationships and other things, but too often relationships are surface level because we overstretch ourselves. I'd rather have 10 dimes than 100 pennies. Choose your parties wisely, in other words. If you're going to create, be interesting, do your homework, you simply can't do that with everyone. You'll have to choose who your crew is, and it's probably fewer people than you currently think. Number six, nurture, don't just hunt. Candidly, I'm terrible at nurturing relationships. I'm always working, rarely party planning, and very seldom will you find me proactively scheduling dinner reservations. Thankfully, I have a better half who is the opposite of my antisocial behavior. He's always exploring and bringing others along with him. If you don't get invited to the parties, throw them. Magic happens. Number seven, conferences, salons, events. If your inbox is not filled with fascinating engagements and humans pining to get to know you, mine either, you have to go find them. How many conferences or events do you attend a year that are not with your immediate friends? For me, it's 10 to 30. Yep. Before I spoke at them, I paid for at least 10 events a year. If you truly want incredible relationships, make sure your words match your actions. The differential will probably surprise you. So go forth and find your humans. Cody. Oh, this is kind of a cool section we just started. It's called the Think for Yourself section. So the first one's about go and see it. This is, I think, the most persuasive, jaw-dropping, and horrifying argument I've ever seen against what is happening in San Francisco. Check it out. Then we've got Packy's essay on ownership and the American dream. Talks about not wealth inequality, but hiding opportunity in the guise of non-ownership. Down round, what the fuck happens when the stock market tanks and startups raise too much? Well said by Prof. G. Oh, and this week we are talking about email list. A bunch of you guys ask us all the time, how do we grow our email? How do we grow our social media? How do we turn it into millions of dollars of revenue? So we made a course on it. We put it up for the next 3 days, I think, with AppSumo. It's basically free. I think it's like $200 or something like that. Also, this is a lengthier one. All right. Sponsorships are a weird privilege. At CT and in everything we do, I always try to think about the second and third order effects. If we do this, what will happen downstream of it is a question I ask myself. A big reason why we sell products as our main revenue source is that I am in alignment with you, the reader. If you don't like our stuff, you won't buy it, and thus we are incentivized to always want to create the stuff that benefits you and you'll love. This month, we added our very first paid partnerships. It's something I have thought very long and very hard about. So much so that we didn't do a single one for 2 years, and we didn't even sell a single product for the first year. I wanted it to be value, value, value. But I'm a capitalist. I believe in the value of letting our customers show us how much they value our creation, aka pay me. So as we add this next new revenue line to our business, still weird to me that sharing our ideas is a business, I wanted to let you know how we choose sponsors and why. Because the only thing that really matters to us is all of you, our readers. A wise man, my father, said, a reputation is the only thing you can't get back. So we hold that line. No money, no influence, no fame, no arm twisting can make me create or partner with those I don't believe in. Will we be wrong? Yes. Will we do partnerships just for the money? No. I'd rather have a small, incredibly fun, value-aligned biz than a billion-dollar behemoth. Okay, enough virtue signaling. Here's our formula in case it interests you. Sponsorships are only done when I believe in a company and I confirm that, one, I would invest in the company if they let me. Two, I use the sponsored product and love it. Three, I would write about the company even if they weren't paying us. Four, I think y'all will actually thank me for putting them on your radar. Usually the smell test goes, am I so stoked about this company that I try to meet the founder, try to talk them into letting us invest, can't shut up about using their product or wanting to try it. This means we'd only do one out of every 10 plus partnerships that come our way. To all those companies we say no to, I'm sorry. I'm sure I'm wrong and you'll live to say I told you so. To the ones I choose, y'all better not let me down or make me look like an idiot. And most importantly to all of you contrarians, thank you. You've made my life so beautiful, it's actually hard to contemplate. I treasure getting to sneak into your inbox each week and your social media each day. It's a responsibility I don't take lightly. Your attention, it's the most precious gift you could give anyone. I hope I am up to the challenge of being worth those minutes of your life. I hope I don't ever let you down. But if I do, know that every day I spend more time thinking about you than just about anything else. Until next week.